This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your holster is way more important than you think it is. It's just way more important than you think it is. What? Look, and I get that. The holster's not the sexy part of carrying firearms, right? You want to talk about your weapon and your ammunition. You want to talk about your safety training. You want to talk about how you did at the range. Oh, look at my groups. I was doing these failure drills today. And all that stuff's really important. I mean, really, really important. I'm not discounting that. But I've known so many people who do all those things. They take all the necessary steps, and then they carry with a holster they bought from a big box hunting store that was made 1,000 at a time. Please, don't put your life in one of those holsters. You need to trust Northwest Retention Systems because it's all custom-made gear. It's the only thing I carry around. NWRetention.com. That's NWRetention.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Gets you 10% off.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the day before an election. I don't know if you've heard, but it is time to calm things down. There's way too much division out there. Way too much, you know, people sniping at each other, people making dire predictions for the future of the nation. So let's talk about the Civil War. We are not talking about the beginning of the Civil War. In fact, we're going to fast forward all the way through it. And, you know, I've done Civil War stories before. I will do them again. We're fast forwarding to the end. In fact, by the time our story ends, the war will pretty much end. And we have to cover a couple things right off the bat. The war looks significantly different in the end than it did in the beginning. And this is what I mean by different. Different in so many ways. And depending on which side you're rooting for, different in good ways, different in bad ways, and sometimes both for each. In the beginning, Union, Confederacy, understand how they viewed each other as well. The people in the North, the people in the Union, viewed the South as treasonous, traitors. That is, and it's important to understand as you look into the war like this, that's a bad thing, especially back then. Sadly, we are at a place in the United States of America where, I mean, yeah, treason, being a traitor, it's still not looked up to. People are like, wow, that's great. But it's not the end of the world. Back then, being called a traitor, accused of treason, that's a death penalty. And high up people, Grant himself said, I greatly admire Robert E. Lee. He should be hanged. That is how people in the North viewed people in the South. And I know I've got a ton of people in the North who listen to my show, and you're probably cheering right now. Now let's go shoes on the other foot. In the South, they viewed the people of the North as tyrannically telling them how to live their lives, one, and two, and this is an important part of the story, they viewed people of the North as invading their country. That is the part so many people miss about this. You can argue whether they were or weren't. I don't care. Everybody has strong feelings. Well, most people have strong feelings about the Civil War still, and that's awesome. It's part of what makes it so fascinating. It's that old. I mean, nobody was alive then who's alive now, and people will still argue about it. I'll have angry emails tomorrow about it, and that's awesome. Good. Send them. Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. I don't care. Yell at me. Agree with me. Doesn't matter. I like that it creates passion in people. It creates passion in me. And I know it's fashionable today. Everybody in the South was a Nazi. All right, well, you're a child. You are probably somebody I won't deal with. Let's deal with the realities of life and the complexities of life. Southerners thought Northerners were invading their country, period. And because that was the feeling each side had about the other, there was such a sad hatred there. And I say sad hatred because I like them all. I like them both. And the things Americans did to other Americans for years out of hatred, man, it's heavy. It's heavy to think about that. And in the beginning, and this plagued the North throughout. In the beginning, the North was getting slapped around on the field of battle quite a bit because the Norse leadership overall throughout the war was, frankly, pathetic. That is not an indictment on Ulysses S. Grant, who was outstanding, or great ones like Sherman. Gosh, Sherman was the man. There were some great Union generals. But in general, to overuse a word, how it was running in the North, and you'll get a stark example of this today, was Congress was way too involved. Many argue Lincoln was way too involved. The generals are very similar to today. You have a few good ones. You have a bunch of really crappy ones. You have some who didn't want to be there. You have many who are simply political appointees. The South did not run their army that way. The South, they had some generals. There is no comparison between Southern generals and Northern generals. The South generals were far superior in World War II. Far superior. As far as quantity goes, you can make arguments like people will say Sherman was the best in the war. I'm not going to argue with that. That might be true. But the South had good commanders and lots of them. And the South's command structure was much more streamlined than the North. You go. And the Southern generals were encouraged to be aggressive and attack. And the North was constantly struggling with getting their generals to attack. Go, geez, please, go kill somebody. And in the beginning, they were fairly evenly matched on the field of battle as far as frontline supplies go. I say frontline supplies because everybody knew the South simply did not have the economy, the resources to last. The North did. Remember, the South's economy was one-fifth the size of New York's, of only New York. That's how much more wealthy the North was. So time was always going to be an enemy to the South. And when I say frontline supplies, I mean, in the beginning, you're going to put up your 20,000 guys, and I'm going to put up my 20,000 guys. And if the uniforms swapped, you wouldn't see any different. Oh, well, they pretty much have the same rifles, same shoes, same bullets, same food, same. Oh, nice. Okay. But there were a bunch of supplies always sitting right behind the northern guys, and that was not the case for the southern guys because the money simply wasn't there. Now, as I said, that is a problem that gets worse and worse and worse over time. Over time, you're having a hard time replenishing supplies. Over time, the daily food rations for your men go down and down and down. If you were a Southerner who happened to live from the beginning of the war to the end, you would have lived through 3 square meals a day to, in the end, existing on 1 pint of corn flour or cornmeal and I believe it was half a pound of bacon a day. Starving. If you were a Southerner in the beginning and lived clear through the end, you would have had the uniform, you would have had boots, you would have had everything you needed. And in the end, there were guys fighting for the South in the snow without footwear on. The South is breaking down. But by 1864, there are a couple big things happening. Remember, it's easy to forget about these things when you and I talk about battles and wars, because it's not the sexy fun part. Politics is such a big part of it. Even remember Caesar's invasion of Gaul last week? Caesar doing this, Caesar doing that. There's a siege here, there's this or that. Politics was always a huge part of it and something Caesar always had to wrestle with. The Senate's saying this, this guy's saying that, this guy's doing this. I better maneuver my troops here because I need a win because the public's thinking this. You see what I mean? The Civil War, 1864 was important. Hang on.
You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
You need an auto protection plan in this life, especially now, because here's what's happened with vehicles. I mean, you talk to your mechanic friends. I talk to my mechanic friends. The vehicles now have so much advanced technology in them, so much advanced computer gear in them, that these repairs simply cost a fortune to make. It costs a fortune to make a repair these days. You don't have that money. I don't have that money laying around. So get an auto protection plan. And if you're going to get one, why not go to America's number one auto protection company, CarShield? CarShield offers a huge range of protection plans. Not one. It's not some one-size-fit-all, you know, idiotic thing. A range of protection plans. They're flexible on your mechanic and flexible on your payments. Go to carshield.com. That's carshield.com. Do not forget to use the code Jesse. And remember, a deductible may apply.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
Something that gets lost in all the Civil War talk and in all war talk is politics. 1864, it was more than just, you know, another year of the war. 1864, there was a presidential election to be held in the United States of America. And that was not a small thing, because the South... The South could, I mean, this is a big oversimplification, but the South could essentially win the war if they could get Abraham Lincoln to lose. You realize that? You realize that this war was always divisive, but as wars do, they get more and more divisive over time. Wars do not ever get more popular as they go along. Never. People want to win them, yes. Sometimes you can smell the barn at the end. It's nice. But think how many people have died by 1864 in this country. Think how many people and how many have been mangled. And understand what that means. You're a Northerner. You're someone who lives in the North. Maybe you're even somebody who voted for Abraham Lincoln last election. I like Lincoln, seems like a nice guy. I wants to abolish slavery, so do I. Really cool stuff. I'm voting for Abraham Lincoln. But maybe you weren't hardcore. I like Abe. We'll see you next time. What if your brother died in the war? What if you lost a son? Two sons. Three sons in the war. Where are you voting now? Where does that pained heart vote now? What if you, maybe you didn't die, what if you don't have a right leg anymore? What if you don't have an eye, both eyes? You see what I mean? And when you send those people, not by the dozen, not by the hundred, by the thousand back into society up north, and then their relatives see them, and then their relatives see them, and their relatives see them, you see how you can get a whole lot less popular really quickly if you're president of the United States of America? 1864 was in doubt. Lincoln, at one point, did not think he was going to win it, period. And the South knew the guy running against Lincoln is going to run on getting out of this war, period. Let him have the South. Isn't that wild to think about? The South could have essentially won the war with the presidential election. They needed Lincoln to lose, and they were smart enough in the South to realize that. Now, by the point of our story, Gettysburg's already happened, lost, lost, lost. And by the point of our story, the South is in serious supply trouble. They are almost done with the whole attacking, invading thing. We'll get to that in a moment. The North now has Ulysses S. Grant in charge. And Abraham Lincoln put him in charge because he is sick of Northern generals who don't do anything. Ulysses S. Grant moves forward, attacking. Oh, here's Sherman. He's my right-hand man. Go, attack. And Ulysses S. Grant has a very, very, very smart strategy. I mean, Ulysses S. Grant is legit. His strategy was simply this. Obviously, he wants to win battles. Don't want to discount that. But his strategy is like a 5 or 6 pronged attack in different areas of the South. Send commanders out, capable commanders like Sherman. Some of them didn't turn out to be capable. But send capable commanders out like Sherman. You attack here. You attack in the Southeast. You attack in the North. You attack here. You essentially, because the South doesn't have the manpower or the resources to defend everywhere at this time, you put so much pressure on them, you try to break them. And this was the part of the war that to this day creates major, major bitterness in some people in the South, because this is the part of the war that got super personal, burning your farm, looting your town, burning down Atlanta, starving your family to death. Because the North, and Grant, to his credit, Grant was not an evil human being. Grant comes off, he's known to be very humane. He knew, I need to break the South now to avoid more pain. A little pain now, or I should say a lot of pain now, to prevent prolonged pain. He was not doing this because he was some sadist. But in the minds of people in the South, this is when this war went from something they're fighting up in Virginia to something they're fighting in my backyard. Now, this is when it got bitter. It was always bitter, but this is when it got super bitter because now it's home. And part of this pronged strategy of the North was they wanted Richmond for obvious reasons. Richmond's huge. Richmond's important. But they thought there was a better way to take Richmond. I want you, and I'm going to simplify this because you could look at maps, it'll make it easier probably. But everything important, or at least mass quantities of things, traveled by rail at this time. Obviously, you wanted horses. They were important. Horses get you to and fro. If you're moving mass quantities of food, ammo, armies, medical supplies, you're moving them by rail, which is why part of the campaigns through the South was tearing up the railroads. Sherman was famous for it. They called him Sherman's neckties. He would have the rail cars the rail lines all bent up and destroyed so the South could no longer get supplies back and forth. Richmond, while obviously just extremely important in and of itself for obvious reasons, Richmond had a bunch of trains running in and out of it. a bunch of rail lines running in and out of it to supply the capital city, move armies around was important. But they thought Richmond might be a little too hard of a target. So south of Richmond, there was another huge depot rail place called Petersburg. Petersburg was not a big place back then, and it ain't a big place today. However, if you look at it at this time, it's just a spider web of rail lines. I mean, it looked like, think of it like the femoral artery. It's not sexy. It's down in your leg. It's not up in your neck. But if somebody cuts it, you are in deep trouble. They decide they're going to go after Petersburg. Now, a couple things before we dig into the actual battle. Remember when I told you things had been changing over the years? Things looked different at the end of this war than they did at the beginning of this war? Well, let's pause here for a moment. You know about World War I because you listened to my show. World War I, when all of a sudden armies were digging trenches and just shooting each other's heads off? World War I, when artillery, indirect fire was being shot way up into the air and landing down on people and mangling them? World War I, when lines of troops would just charge at in-placed gun positions and get mowed down because commanders didn't realize warfare has changed? That World War I? And when people talk about it, myself included, they often say things like, well, this is all new stuff. Nobody could have known. The generals had no idea. Maybe that's not totally accurate. You need a gold IRA. You just have to have a gold IRA. And I'm not one of these guys, as you know, I'm not one of these guys who never takes risks. I have money in stocks and bonds too, full disclosure, and I always will. I believe in that. I don't believe in doing drastic things. But a gold IRA, it's part of how you stay protected. It's part of how you stay protected because look, when the market corrects itself, as we all know it's going to because we have created a gigantic bubble right now. When it corrects itself, that money in stocks and bonds, it's going to take a hit, to put it mildly. And when we're talking about hit, let's think about your retirement right now. What if I were to cut that in half? Yeah. Go get a gold IRA from Gold Alliance. Go to goldalliance.com/Jesse. That's goldalliance.com/Jesse. Go get your gold IRA and get it today. Maybe I should stop saying things like the generals had no way of knowing in World War I because the siege of Petersburg that we're about to get into and basically this entire ending period of the Civil War was a really great indication of what's to come. Know what a siege mortar is? If you don't know what a siege mortar is, go ahead and Google image search Civil War siege mortar. Look familiar at all? Yeah, that's an artillery piece. Indirect fire, firing it way up in the air and coming down. The rifles, by the end of the Civil War, especially in the North where they could afford the best ones, rifles are now insanely more accurate than they've ever been before. And we need to, not to nerd out on gun stuff for you for a moment, But just understand this when it comes to a rifle. What you know now as a bullet, a thing that goes out of a rifle, you see inside of the barrel of a rifle. See, all my gun guys are going to be rolling their eyes at this. Look, I'm giving some basics here. Inside the barrel of a rifle, it essentially is lined so that bullet, that little football-looking bullet, will be spinning really fast when it leaves. That spinning makes it absurdly more accurate, shoots farther. It's just that is what you want. There's a reason quarterbacks throw a football that way. The ball is spinning quickly. Muskets, for most of their, well, not most, all of their history until they figured it out, for all of their history, was really just a ball. It was just a ball. They'd explode some black powder behind the ball, and the ball would go out, oftentimes just a smooth bore, a smooth, you know, smooth barrel. And that is not an accurate weapon and certainly not something you can shoot far. I mean, some of these things, like you'll see it in the movies about how he just aimed really well and hit them all that day. Well, yes, some people were better shots than others. But when you're dealing with something like that, oftentimes you can aim perfectly and it just won't work. It's not accurate. That was not the case by the end of the Civil War. We now had rifling. They now had flat-out snipers, sharpshooters. Shoot, they had Gatling guns. They had artillery. And now we're running into things where men are charging at each other. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Repeatedly charging at each other, but charging into the teeth of accurate rifle fire and being mowed down by the thousand. In one incident, right before the Siege of Petersburg, and Grant, they say Grant wept at the end of this day. One incident, the Union guys kept charging some dug-in Southerners who had accurate rifles, and 7,000 Union guys died, and I think it was 7 minutes. You have any idea how many people? Do you know what that looks like? What that sounds like? That is a slaughter. And because of that, trenches really came into style. Trenches were not invented at this point. Guys had been using trenches and trenching for a long time, but trenches get a whole lot more important when that kind of death is always stalking around. Artillery, accurate rifle fire. The South knows. They know for a fact the North is coming down. The South is digging in, setting up defenses at all their key points they possibly can. But remember, the South has a humongous manpower shortage right now. You want to talk about politics and internal things? Don't think it was just everybody willing to die for the cause in the South. The Southerners had a saying famously. The saying was, "This is a rich man's war and a poor man's fight." And they were 100% right. What it was a bunch of rich people and politicians, in fact, the rich plantation slave owners and the politicians, all down to fight. We got to fight the North. It's get rid of the North. But then they weren't fighting. All the guys, all the poor farmers who never owned a slave, didn't have two nickels to rub together. Those were the guys constantly sent off to fight. And that, not to get off on a long side note here, that creates humongous amounts of bitterness in every society where it's ever been tried. And I think it is criminal that we have now moved into a system where we do that here in the United States of America. Criminal. It creates a level of bitterness. It can ruin a nation. The leaders of a nation, your wealthy people, your powerful people, your politicians need to be at the front of the army. Or their children do. I understand military involvement is necessary sometimes. Sometimes you got to go kill some bad people. I'm not some weird pacifist. I want a lot less intervention than other people, but I'm not some idiot pacifist. Sometimes you got to go put some people in the ground. I have huge problems with a United States senator sending men to go die when he never did and his kids never did. My biggest problem with Mitt Romney is pretty much exactly that. I'm a neocon. We have to be involved anywhere. Send in troops. Let's send in the troops. We better send in the troops. Mitt Romney and his 9,000 kids have never found the recruiting office. Don't do that. I hate that. If something is important enough, if you're a president, senator, congressman, whatever it may be, and you stand up and say, this is so important, it is important enough that we should risk American lives for it, then risk yours or the life of someone you care about, and then you can send someone else. Your kid has to go too. If you don't, you get what we have here in the South. It's not just that they were going hungry. It's not just that they didn't have ammunition. It's that all these wealthy people, I mean, they're back on the plantation sipping on sweet tea, yelling at a slave somewhere. I'm the one out here getting shot in the face. They had problems. They had recruiting problems. They had huge desertion problems by now. These guys are done with it. I can't eat. I can't do anything. I haven't feed my family. I haven't seen my family. I'm out. Oh, I brought up ammunition. Get this weird stat. By this point in the war, a Union soldier had 100 rounds a day he could shoot. A Southern soldier had 15. That is huge. So the South is spread out. Manpower, resources are thin. And at Petersburg, they only have 3,000 dudes. And in comes the Union Army with about 16,000 dudes. And it's their job to take Petersburg. But the Union Army was coming fresh off a couple stinging losses to Lee. The South was still handing out butt whippings. They were coming off a couple stinging losses like the one I mentioned about that had Ulysses S. Grant crying, where they had been charging men into the maw and getting them mowed down. And not only if you're a general, let's say you screw up, or maybe you didn't even screw up, and that's just the way the battle went, and a bunch of men died, and that sucked. It was more than just you having to work on your conscience for that or blaming yourself. Remember when I said this was political? Hang on.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The South is dug in. But there ain't many of them. and the North is coming fresh off a beating. And when you take beatings like that in the North at this time, you're fired the next day. The war has become so contentious, so heated politically, that a general can go from having this long established career to having one bad day out where he loses to the South, gone, bye, fired. Which, it's always a balance. Look, it's a balance in any organization, government, company, whatever it may be. It's a balance. If you're the boss, you do have to have a balance. You have to have your people know there are consequences for failure. There can be dire consequences for failure. However, and I've seen this in private industry too before, where mistake, you're fired, mistake, you're fired, mistake, you're fired. Soon, what you've done is you've created an environment where your people are paralyzed with fear and they won't move. They can't be aggressive. They can't make decisions because they think if it doesn't go right, I can't take this risk. I can't take any risks. I've got a wife, 3 kids at home. I have to feed them. I can't risk my job. So I'm not going to take a risk on behalf of the company. Nope. I'm going to play it safe. The North is running into that a lot by now. These generals, they're political appointees. It's bad. So General Smith for the Union, he charges into Petersburg. And what's crazy is on day number one, he charges into Petersburg, or I should say the outskirts. He wants to take Petersburg that day. He does not know how many men Beauregard, that's the general of the South, has in Petersburg. He charges in and he's working his way through in winning, and he gets to a point where he's pretty much through all the Southern defenses. The South just doesn't have the manpower for this right now. And he stops because he begins to get nervous that it's some kind of a trap and the South is waiting there in number trying to slaughter him as he comes in. He stops. His own troops are freaking out. Why are we stopping? We have to go. Let's finish it. It's right there. He stops on day number one, pulls back, and regroups. This was the moment that Petersburg became a nightmare. It was like a 9-10 month nightmare when it was done. He pulls back. And you lost all the momentum, and momentum is everything. And now the South knows where the Union wants to attack, and they're hauling in reinforcements. The Union's hauling in reinforcements. But Grant, again, remember Grant is aggressive? Grant did not want a siege of Petersburg. Remember, he wants this multi-pronged attack at every different place. And multi-pronged attacks do not involve prolonged sieges. I need you to attack here and attack there. So Grant is breathing down the neck of his commanders. Attack, attack, attack. What are you doing? What are you doing? They attack again. Now the South has reinforcements. The South repels them again. They keep attacking. They keep losing. Now we've settled in for trench warfare. Both sides, here's your World War I preview, have dug into trenches. This battle started in June. It's hot. There are flies everywhere. Soon the rains come. By the time this thing's done, the winter will come. The snow's coming. Guys are losing feet from frostbite. This is your World War I trench warfare preview. Now we're getting to the point where the Union is trying different attacks and the troops are so demoralized that whole units are refusing to attack, refusing orders. This is going very poorly. The Commanders are bad. Lee, in an attempt, Robert E. Lee, in an attempt to break this, what has become a siege, sends somebody towards Washington, D.C. with a bunch of troops. You didn't know that, did you? The South was marching on Washington. They were not under the illusion they were going to be able to take Washington, D.C. But what they were doing, the South realized this really well. They were excellent at this. What they were doing was, let's get them off our back. If we start threatening Washington, D.C., if we threaten the crown jewel, they're going to have to pull people off us and go back. And they come up with a really cool plan. This happened again in World War I several times. They come up with a really cool plan, the North does. Here's what we're going to do. We can't get through the southern lines, right? So if we can't get through them, what if we went under them? Hang on.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
Union comes up with a plan. A very, very, very cool plan, in my opinion. They're going to dig a tunnel. They're going to mine a tunnel underneath the southern lines, set a bunch of explosives in it, and blow a big hole in the southern lines that can charge through. The Southerners were not stupid, and they certainly weren't deaf. They could see the mining operation. They knew the North was trying it, but they dismissed it because they thought the mine was way too far. They did not think the North would be able to do this. They're never going to get here. Get serious. The North starts and starts and starts. And remember, conditions aren't getting better for the Southern troops as we go along, but the North actually finishes its mine, and the day has come to blow and go. They want to blow this mine up and then charge. Oh, man, it didn't work.
Jesse Kelly returns next. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Politics. Sensitivities. There's so much more that goes into battles and conflicts than just bullets, bombs, in bandages. You see, they're about to blow up this big crater and blow a hole in the line. And so what are you and I think? Well, okay, nice. Send some troops through and then it'll be fine, right? And conceptually, you're right. I'm right. Who do you send through? Well, you should send your best troops. Okay. Best troops. What if the South has a double line there? What if they're extra dug in? What if you send your best troops through and they get mowed down? Oh gosh. All right. Never mind. Send your worst troops. Okay, what if this part is so important you need the best performance? And you're sending in the worst troops? What if you send them and they screw it up? What do you do with the black troops? By now, and this had been going on, but by now, there were entire units of black soldiers fighting for the Union, understandably. The black units, though, were not highly regarded because everyone in the North was racist too. The black units were obviously, they acquitted themselves very well, it should be noted, during the Civil War, but they were not highly regarded. Grant, at first, had considered, why don't I send the black troops through first? One, they're not highly regarded, just in case they get mowed down. But then Grant, who was, like I said, a very conscientious man, said, well, no, I can't send the black guys through because if the black guys get mowed down, it's going to look like I just sent the black guys through because I didn't care about black people. You think these concerns only exist today? You got another thing coming. Grant thought he might get fired if you send these black troops through and they all get mowed down. Wait a minute, you took the black units we've been campaigning on and you threw them into the teeth? Yeah, they're all dead now. Sorry. So even deciding who's going through was a problem. Okay, they finally make their decisions. We're going to send these guys through. The time has come. Let's blow the crater. It's easy to forget what an actual explosion is like if you've ever been in the vicinity of one. Not a video, not in the movies, not something you heard about. If you have been anywhere in the vicinity of an explosion, you know what it's like, but even you, even I, forget over time how breathtaking it can be, how it is, you feel like the world is imploding when you're in the presence of a big explosion. We had a couple of our own artillery shells land fairly close to us one time in Iraq. And when I say fairly close, I mean, it's not like I almost died, but I had all my guys in the ground with hands over our heads. And one of my staff sergeants had a piece of shrapnel the size of a soda can land about 2 feet away from him, would have cut him in half. And we were in a city at a time. And all the sound when you're in a city bounces off of everything. I will never forget. I'll never forget that feeling of, oh my gosh. It is breathtaking when massive explosions happen. Maybe you've been in the vicinity of a demo of a building or something. Whatever kind of massive explosion it is something to behold. It can break you. It can daze you. They set off the mine. It does work. They instantly vaporize 200 some Southern soldiers. The crater is gigantic. But the explosion is so much that here you are, you did all this work, you blew a hole underneath the Southern line. It worked perfectly, charged through the gap, but it takes the North a minute to... All right, okay, we have to attack now. My goodness, that was a lot. It takes them a second to get themselves together. The coordination on the ground is an utter disaster. The men go charging up to the crater because they have to go through the crater. Apparently, they stopped on the edge of the crater just to look at it because they'd never seen anything like that before. A fresh hole in the ground. Well, now, to get through the line, you have to run down into it and run across. Things are confusing. Now orders are going back and forth the wrong way. They charge down into the crater, and they kind of get stuck down there. They get confused. They're running this way and that way. They're running into Southern troops now. Some who'd been wounded, some are running down there. The South realizes what's happening. They're scrambling. They're already starting to patch the gap. It takes the Union so long to unscrew themselves from this crater. The South is not only to patch the gap in the line, they now aim cannon fire into the crater where there's a bunch of Union troops just sitting there, and they get absolutely massacred. There are units of black soldiers here, and they take it extremely hard for an obvious reason. They can't surrender. You do get a bunch of Union guys surrendering. And the conditions in the Southern prison camps by now were so bad, the Union guys probably ended up regretting that. But the black troops, you can't surrender. The Southerners hated them, viewed them as the ones being traitors. How absurd is that? But viewed them as the ones being traitors. And the black troops dang well knew they couldn't surrender. You got to fight to the death, or you better get out of here, Jack. There ain't no throwing down your rifle. This fails too. But this goes on for months and months and months and months. And sooner or later, Lee makes the decision he has to abandon Richmond, abandon Petersburg. And this pretty much ends the Civil War and the South falls. Sometimes things happen very, very, very slowly, methodically, over time. And sometimes, even though you're used to things being slow and methodical, sometimes you look around and everything ramps up and falls down on you at one time. I don't know how tomorrow is going to go. I know we joke and it's fun, and I'm never going to stop joking about the Oracle stuff. I don't know. I have every single friend and relative I have texting me. What's going to happen? Hey, what's going to happen? Hey, can you pick up the phone? What's going to happen? One, with all due respect, please stop. Because I talk about this for 4 hours a day. If you want to know what I think, turn on the show. I cannot possibly end all that and then give you your own personal update. One. Two. I think Trump's going to win. And I think maybe we're not thinking about what's going to happen after that. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly. You're listening to the Jesse Kelly Show.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet, maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.